Hello and hi, welcome to a very special Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today are some of the instigators, provocateurs of BlackSciFi.com, and we are here to speak about the deliciousness that is Black Lightning. Okay, guys, why don't you introduce yourselves?
My name is Robert Jeffrey. I'm the editor-in-chief and contributing writer with BlackSciFi.com.
Hi, this is Tuareg Ganges, and I am a contributing writer for BlackSciFi.com.
And we are all big fans of Black Lightning. What started out as a curiosity, a hope, a shining light in the distance that this show would be good and catch on last year has turned into the fiery comet coming right for our faces. I can't explain how much joy Black Lightning brought to my life last year. Just seeing Black superheroes in a Black community and just feeling how real everything was. Dealing with the microaggressions, the not so microaggressions, the extra precautions you have to take in what should be a safe space, in even like, you know, walking to your home. All of those little things that a great portion of the population doesn't even have to worry about, that most of us have had to worry about since we were kids. And just putting a Black superhero in that setting, given even the history of when Black Lightning was created in the 70s, was a joy to me. And seeing that the show was so well written, I would have gone to Los Angeles and just given every single person in that writer's room last year the biggest of hugs, because it brought a tear to my eye. It brought me hope for television and superhero writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise, because when it comes to, I guess, Black superheroes on TV, the only examples that I could think of are like Mantis from back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, I can't think of anything else. I mean, I know I'm probably missing Blade with Sticky Fingers, but when they announced that Black Lightning was going to be joining the CW family, I just wanted the best. And so when the first episode begins with him being arrested by the police, it's just like, you know that you're kind of jumping on board with something that's not off the screen. And from there, it just got better. You know, I'm a big fan of the Arrowverse, but one of the things that, you know, is very noticeable is that we're never at the forefront of these stories. We're definitely a part of a supporting cast, but to not have a TV series, you know, focusing or featuring characters that look like me and Turi, you know, that it was a problem. And specifically because I know that DC has a wide array of characters of color, but then we get Black Lightning and, you know, like some people say, it's the blackest show on TV. You know, just but how about you, Turi? Like, what are your thoughts on it? At least initially.
I definitely agree that it's the blackest show on television. I love Black Lightning. I love how it just touches on issues in real ways, like, you know, it's not like it's just kind of like touched on and it comes out of nowhere. You know, I mean, there's a whole story that goes along with it. You have like the realities of you know, like the people's lives, how it affects them, you know, the repercussions, how things, you know, like expand out into the community. talking about so much, the dialogue is so real with it, you know. It's not like a forced, cheesy, you know, kind of commentary going on here. You know, it's like, okay, no, seriously, like people, like I hear conversations like that, or like people are talking about that, speaking that way. It's definitely, I don't know, it's just, it's real. And then on top of it, we have our joy of the science, you know, the sci-fi-ness of it. But it's just like, I don't know. it's just awesome. But definitely, I agree. It's like the blackest show on television, and I don't want them to change it.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I worried that last year, after after last season, they might tone it down a little bit. I'm glad that they didn't. They did not. They actually
came back like blacker than ever.
Oh my goodness! They just came back. They didn't double down. They tripled down with season two. I mean, I remember season one was just, things were like just slowly fed out. Like you had the colorism and classism in the between the high school girls, and then you had the sister dialogue. The dialogue between Jennifer and Anissa was, I'm like, oh yeah, I can believe that they're sisters because, oh yeah, that there. And then just the ruthlessness of Tobias, which we have to get into later, but I see a pattern of stuff that happened to him in the first season that has carried over to the second season. And I wonder if that's intentional, but we can talk about that later. But yeah, season two opened up with just so much social commentary. Not just commentary, social bitch slapping. And just it was refreshing. It was startling, but there was like a moment where, oh my God, they really did that. And I felt like I could breathe a little bit. I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah, that's how I see that. That's how that feels to me. And I'm glad other people are seeing it and responding, going, yeah, I'm down with that. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, so when we watch, my wife and I watch the first episode, and you see I think his name is Issa. Because he's now a reoccurring character. And you start seeing shades of like Eric Garner. It was really hard, you know, to watch. And then even you have, you know, there's, you know, it's being shot as if it's from a, you know, camera phone, and you're just seeing somebody die, you know, you're seeing another black life taken away by the cops, and you throw in, so that's the social commentary. But then you have this, I guess the commentary that has bled over from last season, where he's one of these kids that you find out has been subjected to these like Tuskegee experiments, type of deal with the, I think they're called the green light babies, where, so that it's every, it just, they're throwing so much into this, and it's a fictional superhero world, but it still works, you know, and it's just one of the things
reality,
where, yeah, and I've been telling folks, like, the only other show that I think that is, has, tries to get is, like, not even close to woke like this is Supergirl of all shows. But this does it, like, on a whole nother level. But yeah, I mean, from the get-go, they were like, yeah, this is us. this is what we are. So yeah,
it was the other like social commentary, the other like the realness of like the whole like Issa storyline and things like that was when he came back to life, and like before we knew what his power is, you heard like the mother like, you know, like flip out and like, you know, I thought I was rid of you, you know what I'm saying? Like he, you know, it gives that whole reality to, if you're, you know, your mom, you're trying to do the best with your kids, but if your kids are out here on the streets, they're taking, you know, drugs, you know, taking part of crimes, gangs, things like that. You know, I mean, it's real. I've heard you know, the sort of thing where it's sort of like, well, now that I know he's in the grave, I know he's safe, I'm not worrying about him anymore. And I mean, that is like, that's real talk. It's stuff that people do not say. I mean, they, you know, they said it, but then everybody else kind of like, dang, you know, you're cold for a mom. You know, it's like, it doesn't come out, but it's like, that's like a reality in our culture. Like, you know, we are not proud of the shady, you know, the crime, the drugs, the, you know, the gangs. We're not proud of that stuff in our culture. We don't want our kids to be a part of it. And, you know, a lot of the kids just see it as sort of like, well, that's the way of life. That's the way that things are. And they don't see beyond like their part in it. Like they can't see that it affects like their family, how it might affect their mother, how it might affect the community or like their other loved ones and things like that. So when mom was like, you know, get away from me, and she backed up, I was like, okay, we thought like this show was real, but this show got real, real like with that. It was like, it was, you know, it got real like when she said that. And I was like, okay, too much. It's like, it's so much in one episode. It's like the blackness is just, it's like, it's like exploding. It's just everywhere. There's like so much realness to it. But that part, like, you know, the Issa storyline in that, and like how it really tells more about like our community, like the, you know, how things impact our families, you know, that, yeah, I'm sorry, Supergirl can't touch that.
Yeah, I was wondering where they were going with the commentary of Issa's family just rejecting him, until they clued us in that his power was making them do that. But it's still, it's one of those things where they wouldn't have said it if they weren't thinking it. You know, if some part of them wasn't feeling that for real, they would have, it wouldn't have been there for them, you know, for him to force them to actually say it out loud. And as for like the opening scenes where we see him get killed, you know, choked out by the cops, I think they wanted to jump in. The writer's like, okay, we opened with a very powerful, painful scene in the first episode of season one where Jefferson Pierce is hauled out of his car wearing a tuxedo saying, well, you fit the description. No, I don't. And then just humiliating him like that. And then with the choking out of Issa, you have this, it doubles down on that. And I'm like, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, how are they going to open season three? they ramped up from season one to season two. I'm like, what are they going to do for season three? But everything in that first episode blew my mind, where you had the families of the kids who are still in the pods, who've been in the pods for 30 years, having no recourse to get their loved ones back. And I just said, wow, if that's not a parallel to slavery, when parents couldn't keep their kids, you know, or a freed, you know, a freed relative couldn't come up with the money to buy another child out of slavery. I'm like, oh my God, they went there.
Or even like the kids, you know, the children coming over, you know, crossing the border and being, you know, caged up as well.
Yeah.
And like they have, you know, families that are citizens here that weren't able to, you know, to get them and things like that. Either, so.
And in some cases, just having, just knowing that they're there and that you are powerless to do anything about them. You can't care for your family. You can't take care of them. You can't free them. That pain. And knowing that the people who are keeping them caged up don't care if you're in pain or not, don't care if the children are live or die, that just adds a level of hopelessness and rage to the situation.
Yeah. And it's and the worst part about it, Bill Duke, is that his name? Yes. The bad guy, like he does it really well, but it's like, you know, one of the things that I do like, the other thing I like about the show is that it shows that black people aren't, well, you say monolithic, you know, it's like there are different, we come in like there are different sides to us, So it's like last season, the I think they call it the, is it the ASA?
Yes.
Okay, so the ASA agent was this Make America Great Again, Trump, racism spouting, whatever dude. And then this season we have, Bill Duke, who's still he's not on that level, but he's still the government. He's the government guy. So, and then going to the extreme with Tobias, and then on the other end, Jefferson Pierce, and just, everything, it just shows. And that's one of the things I like about this series, but also, comics and sci-fi in general, where it just shows that, unlike in the past, we're not stereotypes. There's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, even take it as far as, I was thinking about the assistant principal, from last season, and her allegiances, like she's playing both sides.
I'm sorry, I want those shoes.
Exactly. Yeah, as soon as that scene opened up, we were like, oh gosh, she took off the shoes.
Oh my goodness.
But I just love the fact that, like, it's not like we're just one type when it comes to the show, and that's something that's been very lacking, I think, when it comes to sci-fi and, I don't know, just pop culture in general.
Yeah. I was just going on about, like, Robert Townsend, his character, and, Meteor Man and Black Lightning, together, but his character is so smug about Jefferson stepping down like that, I'm like, okay, I don't really like him right now. It's like, oh no. And, for them, even like the Bill Duke character is like, hey, you guys like pop like an icon up on the screen, and then you make us not like them.
I love it. See, that's what I love.
No, I mean, it's great, but it's that the same thing. It's like, oh, it's like, because you first you're excited to see them, and then it's like, oh man, I'm mad at that. That sucks. But it shows their talent that they can pull the stuff off. Like, if you can make me not like you, hey.
Yeah, I liked the part where Bill Duke is telling Lynn Pierce that he doesn't want her to have anything to do with this. She is absolutely either a troublemaker or just trouble in his mind. He doesn't want her anywhere near this. And when he starts to realize how much she can help, his focus is still on what can we use these kids for. And the first thing that popped in my mind is, okay, he is playing this a little bit like the cigarette smoking man in X-Files. He has his own agenda. He wants these kids to be used as tools. He doesn't care about their freedom. He doesn't care about their rights. He just sees their powers, and he wants to know how to control them and use them. And I'm like, oh, he's full on with the company program, the company line. And then the vice principal, what's her name, Kara. I don't think she realized what she was signing up for. But when she fully realized it, she knew she had to do something. Unfortunately, that harpoon just gave her a bad day.
She thought she could take Tobias, though. Why?
But she took out cyanide. She took out cyanide. And the funniest line you will only ever hear that from a black woman is, bitch, you got my hair wet. I lost it when she said that. I laughed my ass off. I almost fell off the sofa.
When she walked into the room with Tobias, it was... what's the movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? Guy says, he says, shoot. He said, don't talk, just shoot. And I was just like, why did she just run in there just guns blazing? I mean, she had both pulled out like a John Woo movie extra. So I just wanted her to like light Tobias up. But, she gave him the opportunity to use a spear gun. And I'm just surprised, like, she jumped out that window like she hadn't taken a harpoon to the gut.
Adrenaline can make you do something.
How bad must Tobias be that you would rather jump out a window? That's my thing. You know, it's like, all right, you thought you could take him? All right. And then it came to, you know, the conclusion, like, you know what? I think it's safer that I jump out the window than to take him. All right. What does that say about him?
And we saw in episode 2 just what that meant, because he went a little crazy. Mm-hmm. He went a little crazy on everybody who knew about his involvement with killing Jefferson Pierce's father. And he's just, the way he took out that old man. They're sitting there, they're sharing, you know, drink. And he's like, do you remember this? And he says, well, you remember it, I have to kill you. And I'm like, what is going on here? And then just he gets just more violent and more unhinged. The game of full contact chess he was playing with Khalil.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that was just ridiculous.
I'm like, don't play Uno with him, checkers, nothing, hide and go seek, nothing, pick up sticks. Don't play anything with Tobias ever.
Oh my goodness.
The guy in the truck, like the minute the guy, he says to the guy in the truck, is like, oh, you're my friend. I'm like, oh, he's about to kill this man.
And that was
like, he's dead.
That guy was a detective too.
Yeah, he was. I can't remember if he, because I know that last season there was one corrupt cop that he kept dealing with. I remember there was a guy that let him into the, into the police station to talk to Lala, think it was.
Yeah, I think that was that guy.
Okay, yeah, so he's, I think there's kind of a method to his madness, because I he's really like cleaning up shop to the point where nobody can trace anything back to him. And I think it has something to do with that. I call it the Pulp Fiction briefcase from last season. But no, I mean, I think he was at his craziest when he was playing slap chess with Painkiller. But I think that's his cult name. But so I don't know. I like the actor. Like, y'all were talking about the colorism part of, you know, as far as with him. Like, every time he says, like, Negroes, I'm just like, it's a count. Like, it's a drinking game at this point. But he's a really good actor who just kind of came out of nowhere. And knowing the character from the comic books, I think he's doing a good job of, I mean, he was even a young, I think, Justice League Unlimited a while back. Like, he's been in animated form also. But yeah, I think he's doing a really good job in the role.
Yeah, he definitely won me over with his over the top portrayal. Just he doesn't care. He wants what he wants. And I think what I was saying earlier, I think he has lost all of the females, the alpha females around him, who he would listen to take advice from. Because first there was Lady Eve. Lady Eve had her own agenda, but she was an influence on Tobias. Then there was his sister. When those two died, all he had left was Cyanide. And we see where he's gone over that edge now that when Cyanide was killed. And I just wonder if the loss of that potentially reasonable influence on him being gone is going to take him down a path where he will have no choice but to be exposed, and maybe cause a lot of problems for everybody in Freeland.
You think I don't think Cyanide was reasonable. I think she was just as, I'm just being real. Like, I think she was just as ruthless. Now, maybe not crazy, but as ruthless as he is, because I was kind of disappointed. I mean, I really like the fight scene between her and I cannot remember the other lady's name. I just
Kara.
Keep calling her the assistant principal.
Kara.
But I kind of wish, for a couple of reasons, that she was still around, because that when they told the origin of, I think Tobias like find her in a dumpster or something, and brought her and like raised, either that or like found her when she was a baby or a child that had just been tossed away and, you know, kind of raised her you know, and then basically kind of brainwashed her. And then also the fact that, like you said, at this point, we don't, there aren't any like top women, like villains, and that taking her out, I felt just mm-hmm. like they really need to introduce, because they had like very solid like female antagonists last season. And, you know, Jill Scott, as Lady Eve, her sister, who only got a few episodes, and they just took Cyanide out in the first episode. So that was a concern that I had. I'm hoping they bring back a, you know, another, like, a female antagonist for this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't saying that Cyanide was reasonable, but she, okay. she had at several points last season given Tobias advice that was, well, maybe you should do it this way instead. You know, so she okay. had a alternate perspective other than going full thermonuclear device on everything.
Definitely. But well, I guess rest in peace. And we even barely talk about his other right-hand man, who just looked like, I don't even remember that guy's name from the first season. The guy who had been with him for a minute too. But yeah, like you said, now he is just painkiller and Khalil, and even he is worried about being a part of his part of the squad. So.
Funny.
Yeah, who is part of his team now other than Painkiller? Because we haven't seen anybody else this season, have we?
Minions, I guess, yeah. No.
No, I mean, unless Lala made it out of that room somehow. I mean, he came back from the dead once. Can he do it again? But yeah, I don't know who else he has on his team right now.
Yeah. So unless somebody scooped up all of Lala's pieces and put them together in a room, back room someplace, and they're just waiting for them to reconnect, yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Still wearing the same jumpsuit.
these kids, I mean, all these pod kids, and, you know, we don't know what's going to go on with Issa. You know, I mean, there's a possibility, because you can kind of see, like the Khalil character, he feels indebted, you know, to them. Like, you know, so that's why he keeps doing what he does, but he doesn't like it. So, like, you know, that seems to be his, you know, how he gets to others, you know? So, I mean, anybody could be on his squad, basically, if he saves them in some way, if he gives them a way, or they owe him enough.
Mm-hmm. So do you think Khalil has a chance of walking away from Tobias? Because he seems still to be pretty attached to Jennifer, but, you know, Jennifer can't tell him why, but she doesn't want to have anything to do with him. But it seemed to me like he was looking to her as something to grab onto to help walk away from Tobias's influence.
It's one of the things, like, you feel as though he can be redeemed, because, like, you know, he doesn't want to be, like, he feels bad about, you know, what happened with Black Lightning. He, you know what I'm saying, like, he didn't mean to, all that stuff. Like, there's, like, some redemptive qualities going on there, but then he also said, but he gave me my legs. You know, it's like he feels indebted to Tobias, and he kind of hangs in there. Plus, you know, he's going to knock you out over a chess game. What's going to happen if you try to quit the gang? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you kind of like stay in there. So it's kind of, it's hard. I think, you know, he may be looking for some sense of normalcy in all this craziness, like with Jennifer. That's like, you know, the last piece of like his normal life, the last piece of that, without really knowing, you know, he doesn't know, you know, what she can do. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you would think so. I think he may try, but good luck, sir. It's just not going to happen. It's like, you won't walk away, put it that way. Yeah.
He's going to be carried away. He's going to be
carried. Hey, that's...
He's like, Tobias gave him his legs. It's like, you know, oh, okay, I'll take them back somehow, I guess. I don't know. Tobias is cold.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
there's...
You can see that, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's only so long that those cheekbones will hold up against those slabs.
I'm glad they got a better wig. I'm sorry, like, the grand less. Yeah, I'm just, like, I don't, it was, okay, yeah. I mean, it was, I guess they had to give him a very distinct look, but it's, they're doing better with him this season. So that's, I'm glad he's been redeemed for that. But,
So what are your thoughts on the different directions that Anissa and Jennifer are heading into? Because mm-hmm. Anissa went a little bit diva on us, and Jennifer yeah. is still spiraling down into her PTSD.
Right.
Okay, so I'm glad. I think with the first episode that Jennifer, actually over both episodes, Jennifer has actually been reacting appropriately, because even when one of the things I realized like last season was that her and Anissa, and I don't know how much Lynn had seen during her when she was first married to Black Lightning, but they saw a man murdered in front of them, even though he was like a racist kind of scumbag a-hole. Like when Jennifer said last, I think it was last episode, like, yeah, we watched somebody get murdered. We saw this and that and that. And then Anissa was like, oh, let's just go fight crime. It was just like, so I'm in more of a support of Jennifer, you know, kind of dealing with, like you said, the PTSD. And I think because they did a really good job of showing someone who doesn't necessarily feel that, you know, these abilities are a blessing. I mean, especially when she started talking about, you know, can I have children? Can I have a life? You know, can I have this and that? Mm-hmm. I'm cool with her, you know. And but Anissa, the second episode more so than the first, you know, she's doing the most. She's doing the most, and I like the fact that she was checked. And this is another a Black moment when she tried to raise her voice at her dad. He was like, essentially, I don't care how old you are, you need to tone it down. And mm-hmm. that was very appropriate. And then the whole thing of her seeing her ex, you know, when she went out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm more supportive in where Jennifer is headed, you know, basically.
Yeah, I mean, well, with Jennifer, it's like, it's good that there's that realistic thing where you can kind of, like, see where someone gets their powers and how it may, like you said, like, they may not like it. They, you know, may have a hard time dealing with it. It's too much to take. And so I like that. You know, as a mom and as a teacher, I kind of, like, get tired of her teenage ways and all her little angst and her little snarkiness. So, you know, she gets on my nerves. But I do appreciate the realness of, you know, that she doesn't just go, okay, great, let's go fight crime together. You know, she's not like that. That is very real. With Anissa and her father, that's sort of like that generational thing. Like, even if we look at, like, our different movements, you know, like civil rights movements versus Black Lives Matter and things like that, when you see that there's different ideals on the you know, with the different generations, like, you know, for Anissa to seem as though she, you know, she can jump up on top of a car and take bows and, you know, things like that, you know, can be arrogant with it. And, you know, like, to her, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, yeah, like, it's no big deal. Like, you know, people want to see this, you know, kind of like that, the generation where he's gone through some stuff, he knows it's better to be sort of like undercover and to be, like, you know, out of the spotlight as much as possible, because it's safer that way. You know, people aren't going to try to figure out who you are. Less people are going to try to take you down. You know, he's gone through more, and he has much more of a cautious way of looking at it, as an older generation does with the younger. So it's like, a lot of times there's the commentary of, like, how sometimes you've got, like, the younger group in the Black Lives Matter movement talking about the old heads from the civil rights. And, you know, it's just, like, the way that they kind of, like, talk about the different, you know, the different ways of going about the same thing, in my opinion. So I think it kind of, like, it definitely highlights that. So it was interesting to me to see that they, you know, they can touch on it that way. But you do worry, arrogance, you know, it's going to be a hard fall, you know.
Yeah, seeing the way she was sort of dismissive but apologetic to Grace, I didn't think that they had broken up. They had just like kind of gone their own ways for a little while because, you know, they were out in the, Anessa was out in the woods, you know, hiding out for a while. She just, you know, didn't call her potential girlfriend back when they got in. It's like they hadn't really started seeing each other, but they were on that edge of getting ready to start dating. And then Anessa pulled away and decided, hey, I'm going to go test these waters and these powers at the same time.
Okay. Wow, that's a heck of an excuse. I got lost in the woods. So I never called you back. Like, yeah, the ASA, they attacked us. I want to see her telling that story. I forgot about that.
I think this whole season is going to be a never-ending series of shocks because the whole season is titled The Book of Consequences. So it just seems to me that we are being set up. Everything that happens, there's going to be an equal and opposite, you know, tragic recoil. And I'm looking forward to what's coming. But part of me is also terrified. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Even just the fact that he, you know, lost his job or his position, the school meant so much to him. It's so important to him. And he's so important to the students, to the school, to the community. And for that consequence of being Black Lightning, you know, like what his regular life passion is taken away. So that's already like one thing where it's like, you know, I mean, I felt that was hard. You know, I didn't like that he had to tell people like, yeah, you know, you guys are going to like this whole Mike Lowry guy coming in, you know, like, I'm like, okay, like got a brown nose up a little bit, you know, it's like that sucks. To find out he's going to go from being the principal to being like a teacher, you know, under the person that's going to take your place. It's like, you're going to stay in the same school. Like that's, you know, I'm like, oh, that's hard. But when his students started his call response, you know, I was like, okay, I see why you want to stay. I see why you want to hang in there. You know, this really is your passion. It's more about the kids and that's awesome. But when, you know, I wasn't even thinking about this book consequences title. So it really does start to like say, okay, yeah, it's like that's, you can already see that is a tragic loss to him alone. And it does scare you. What else can happen to this man, you know, kind of thing. Because you see who matters most to him next, or who really matters most to him is like his, you know, his wife and kids, like his family is most important. School is most important. So it's like, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen? You know, we talk about identity. Oh, what about his identity, you know, when he revealed himself to his friend, you know, the police officer.
Henderson,
you know,
yeah.
What are going to be these consequences that we're talking about? Yeah, it does get a little more scary when you think about the title.
Yeah, that whole sequence with Henderson, that was heartbreaking because you could see he was angry. He's like, I don't believe it took me this long to figure that out. And he was angry at himself, and he was angry that someone who he considered one of his best friends didn't trust him with that, didn't trust him to be able to help him. And there's an obviousness. It's like, look, I am protecting you by having you not know, because you have more than plausible deniability. You honestly do not know. And nobody can use that information against you or force you to use it against me. That's, you know, that's how I see it. But Henderson was still angry. He's like, man, that whole sequence where he said, and is, you know, is Lynn Thunder? And he goes, no. He says, oh, of course, Anessa. Like he couldn't believe it. He's like, I can't believe it took me that long to put that together. But that's,
yeah.
I hope
everyone
that doesn't,
like, you never saw him in some sunshades, but you know.
I don't understand. I mean, I understand how they came up with supposedly the electricity around him that he channels, that he pulls in, distorts his features and he uses the voice distorter in the suit. I can sort of see that, but Anissa doesn't have that same power. And in a couple of instances, she had the same hairstyle. It's like, what? She got Clark Kent glasses on. This doesn't work. But so hopefully that the consequences of that don't get anybody dead. And as long as that's the case, I'm okay with a little bit of damage.
Yeah.
But I mean,
you can see where he might have it, like that might be his mission now, is to, you know, get these vigilantes off the street, or, you know, I mean, it could be something. And then, of course, like when you do think about, like, he knows Anissa is Thunder, but like Thunder just like robbed all those drug dealer people, you know what I'm saying? Like, so she's robbing folks for the money. Like, that's going to have, you know, some consequences too, you know. At some point in time, they're going to be like, hey, one chick just beat up like this whole house full of brothers and stuff like that, and like, oh, you know, you can tell, like, you know, there was some bit of, you know, like an earthquake or something came through here. Someone can point, you know, can figure out who did it, if they thought about it, especially a cop, a trained detective, you know. So he might, you know, he might have to go after them, because that's his job, is to uphold law, which is of course why Jefferson doesn't want to tell you this stuff, you know, in the first place. But yeah, there are definitely some consequences, and you know, yeah, I keep thinking about how her attitude, her chest is puffed up. She thinks she feels untouchable, and like she's doing all this stuff, and I don't know.
That's
consequences. It's like, watch out, everybody. Mm-hmm. You will break yourself.
Well, I mean, that's what's going to make her hopefully not. I mean, the fall is going to be hard if and when it happens. I wanted to, because we had actually, you mentioned this. Can we talk about the Daredevil hallway fight scene?
Oh, yeah.
I really like the scene, but the other thing I noticed about it was, like, this is the most ethnically diverse street gang that I've seen since Walker, Texas Ranger. And I chalked that up to, like, you know, it was, like, whatever stunt people they could find in Atlanta, you know, for that day. I thought it was a really good scene. And it also kind of shows, you know, the training that she has been receiving from her dad. So I thought that was really, really cool. But yeah, it's, you know, because, you know, Daredevil comes out later on this month. That kind of kept me, what do you say, satiated until I can get my hallway fight scene in this you know, season coming up. But I thought they did a really good job of just kind of showing her, using her abilities, but also, you know, just kicking butt, which was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was a very nice fight.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I actually did have one question, Suri. Now, because I know you're in the education field, how do you feel that they handle? Because I think it's one of the highlights of the show. But how do you feel that they handle, essentially, like school life? You know, this I guess private school. You know, the education system, and because they're a private school, right, or a public school?
Mm-hmm. No, that's I thought that was
private,
a
charter.
A charter school.
No, I think that's a public high school, but they have stricter rules because of, you know, Jefferson Pierce wanted the students to have a say, you know, just to be more of a community, more proud of where they were. Because if that was a charter school or a private school, the school board would not be involved.
Oh no, they will. All right, so in Baltimore, like, our charter schools are publicly funded, so it is they are a branch out of public school system, and there are boards and things like that. So they have to go back to the school board like every so many years based on how long their charter has been approved for. So he does have to answer, you know. So it's like a charter school basically is trying to have like much more autonomy as to how they run things. Like, yes, we're, you know, we know we have these standards to meet. Yes, we, you know, we want to provide this and we have to do this. But we feel as though our way is going to be the best way. Like, this is going to be a very positive way. It's going to be effective. And give us a few years to show you, you know, we'll prove it. And so apparently this school has been around, because he said, like, he was a student there, you know, has been around for some time. So it's like, it could be more of a public or a charter. It's something, because it's not your everyday, you know, public school. And considering all the uniforms and things like that, it's like, I was thinking it was like more private, but so many people go there, you know, from the community. So it's like, I don't know, maybe it's more like a charter. I mean, there's stuff to it that's real, you know, definitely. But yeah, your principal cannot go like missing for as long as he would have gone missing, and expected to have a job. You know, like that is realistic. I'm still mad that, you know, Robert Townsend has to be the one to break the news to him, you know, and go about it in such a way, you know, where he's got to be the blackbird about it and stuff. But, you know, yeah, he it's surprising that he was able to even come back to work, you know, because right. Stuff like that, you know, it happens. It's like, all right, some principals, they've disappeared. They've gone, you know, things have happened and they've like not shown up. But they usually tend to not be the principal of that school anymore. You know, like, even if they keep their job, like, somewhere within, you know, the city, somewhere within a district, they're usually, like, probably, like, an office somewhere, you know, not in a position, like, leadership position like that. So, yeah, definitely, you know, if he was as disappeared and is gone as long as we perceive that he was to heal, it's amazing that he even was able to come back, you know, for a day. And to battle for the job, or like, you know, to say all that, yeah. In real life. So it's like, yeah, so that is realistic that he would lose his job, you know, or be demoted since he's going to be a teacher. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff about it. And there's other things that, okay, like you don't notice, you know, like you don't notice that this is happening, but yeah, we say that all the time about, you know, regular school, like, oh, you guys didn't notice the kids were over here. You know, but they do something.
Yeah, I guess I always assumed that because he had been in charge for so long, he had set these mm-hmm. rules up to try to make it, to make Jefferson like a feeder school to higher education, because mm-hmm. he wanted the students to meet certain academic standards, and that meant implementing uniforms and a code of conduct. Mm-hmm. And I got that impression from the first season. Because, like you said, he mm-hmm. said he had gone to that school. And then when he came back as a teacher and a principal, he made it his mission to make sure that that school was a safe haven, a place where education was foremost. You know, athletics was good, but he wanted to make sure that every child there got a fair shake at education. That's the impression mm-hmm. I got from the discussion he had pre-dead Lala, when he said, you know, we had an agreement you would keep this out of the school. So that's why I always mm-hmm. assumed that the high school, Freeland High School, was a public school, just with higher standards enacted, because that's what Jefferson Pierce wanted his students to experience, something to give them a sense of pride in themselves and what they could achieve.
Yeah. It could, I guess, one way you would know for sure is if they actually showed a game, like, where you knew, like, who were they playing, who were the rival schools and things like that, because then you get more of a sense of, like, the greater community, and yeah. you can see, like, is this the only school in Freeland, or is there another high school? Like, is there, like, your you know, the regular one? But considering that it looks like the majority of the kids go there, you know, it's safe to say that it's a public school, but he does have, you know, he did fight for some kind of autonomy to be able to have, like, these rules and these standards. But the thing is, like, with a public, like, a regular public, you know, you can get, like, your slaps on your wrist, you can, you know, be suspended, you know, and things like that. When you get expelled, there's got to be another school for you to go to. So, like, for him to be like, okay, these are my, you know, the expectations are this. If you don't meet them, where would you go? So there's got to be, like, some other school somewhere, or else, you know, that's part of the problem, like, to be the only school for a particular, like, city or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, so, like, what happens when the kid really messes up and stuff like that, and they get expelled? Like, you know, they have to go to, like, a neighboring city, county, you know, school or something like that, and all the arrangements have to be made. Quite possibly, yeah. But because of that being, like, so urban, I would assume there's probably other schools within the district that the kids can go to.
Yeah, I think others.
I mean, that is called Freeland.
Yeah. But there were, I think there were other schools implied, because there was mention of a track meet that Khalil and Jennifer had been at, but I don't know that they ever mentioned any names of schools, other schools.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like if they went bigger into the school culture, you could say, like, oh, yeah, or they like gave more explanation about things. But definitely a principal can like, come in and try to have, like, you know, like, raise the standards, raise the expectations. We're going to have these uniforms. We're going to say this. My school, I teach at all-boys school. It's still public. But the way that the school is done, you know, like they have, you know, they have their motto, their creed, they read every morning, and, you know, they have uniforms and, you know, things like that. It's similar in a sense, the expectations and things like that, in a lot of ways. So it's like, you know, a public school can do it. But if you're the principal that kind of like makes it known, like, look, I'm trying to do something different. Well, you're also going to be under the microscope. So, you know, the minute you slip up and disappear for God knows how long, stuff like that, it's like, oh, by the way, we're coming in for that job because you're supposed to be doing this and there was attack and da 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 da. You know what I'm saying? And we've been waiting for something, because that's the thing. It's like you've made yourself that squeaky wheel. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, so the first chance I have for you guys to slip, for your school to slip up in some way, shape, or form, I'm coming for you. You know, because there's too many egos in the education system. So, you know what I'm saying? You can only imagine that even if that is like the regular public school for right there, but for him to be able to run it that way, oh, yeah, they've been waiting for him to mess up, especially being black. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like they're waiting for you to mess up so we can get rid of you.
Dude, can you imagine the pressure? They're like, they're waiting for a reason to come take down Black Jesus.
Hey, that is like any like position, like black position of power. It's not just the school. It's like any black position of power. It's like that is real. Like, okay, you got here. You had to do this and that and stuff like that. We have been waiting for you to fall. We've been waiting for that one moment to swoop in and like knock you off your throne because we can't stand you to do well. And that's real. That is like so super real.
I mean, it just like
Simpson and Robert Townsend to do it, y'all. That just sucks. Yeah. Like, media, why?
They should have. I would love to see him make a reference to just meteors for no reason.
Right?
Yeah, like, hey, did you see that meteor shower tonight? And then Jefferson says, "Why are you talking to me about this? You just fired me." But I'm actually hoping that they mention, you know, like Gotham Academy, you know, just for the heck of it, to say like that's the nearest school and see what happens. See if we get a Bruce Wayne cameo, a little outsiders action. But yeah, because like when I saw the uniforms, I was like, oh, okay, it might be a charter, it might be a private school, but yeah, I mean, it makes more sense about, you know, public or charter. But that was, from the first season, those were some of my favorite moments, like just seeing him with the kids, you know, at the school. Mm-hmm. And I think now that he's, you know, a teacher, you might get more moments like that, especially with him interacting with maybe green light babies if they, you know, start coming through to the school, you know, school system or whatever. So we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we shall see. Any other comments or observations you want to make?
I guess I'm talking more about like the school things and other schools, because Issa recognizes him for who he is, but not like he was a student there. Like, he just knows him from, like, you know, like the news and stuff like that. So yeah, there's got to be some kind of a greater, you know, other schools and stuff like that. Like, they don't all go to his school. But anyway, that's just going back to that. But observation when you have his his meeting of Issa. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to what the season's going to bring, but I would love if they could do this, bring in some of the Milestone Universe characters, Milestone Media, like Icon, Rocket. Everybody's been asking for Static.
Yeah, I think they've already said Static isn't going to show up. But even if there weren't, shall we say, ownership issues related to the Milestone characters, could they actually be in the DC universe at all, or were they on their own separate universe?
That, and like you said before, that ties into the whole issues of like rights and who owns what. But my example is always, there are two things. Back in, I guess, the mid-2000s, the Milestone universe was merged or brought in into the DC universe. So you had characters like Icon and Static, Icon and Rocket, you know, popping up in Justice League, and then also Static had his own ongoing, and then also Young Justice. Static, Icon, and Rocket popped up, and they were in the DC universe. So there has been a precedent for it being done. I just want to see some of those characters brought to live action. And I think that this would be like the perfect, and especially with a lot of the commentary. I mean, if you want to talk about social commentary, go back and read those first runs of, you know, the Milestone books. And I think that those characters would match perfectly. But outside of that, I'm wondering if they'll ever attempt to cross them over with the other Arrowverse shows. And I definitely do think that this is in its own universe, pocket universe. Because last season they mentioned Supergirl and Vixen, but I don't want them to be just separated, but I also want them to still, like, you know, maintain the independence that they have. But I, you know, just, it's just a comic book fan of me. I just, you know, would like to kind of see, you know, some, like, one character talking to another, but that's kind of what I want from this season. And, you know, just some, keep up the same quality as they did last season. So
knowing what you know about the comics books and the Arrowverse that's currently on the CW, which show do you think would be most likely to either have a cameo of Black Lightning appear on them, or have one of them, you know, have an actual physical presence on Black Lightning for like 2 seconds?
At this point, Arrow. Because Arrow is, I've always felt that Arrow is the stand-in for Batman, and considering the fact that they're more, let's say, the street-level heroes, I mean, kind of TV shows, I could see it working with either, I can see the two of those kind of crossing over. It would be interesting, I mean, to see Ollie, or to see, you know, Green Arrow come to Freeland and try to dispense his justice, and then Anissa saying, like, yeah, you need to go back. You really need to go back. Go back to your city and just kind of, you know, chill with, you know, coming over here and telling us what to do. But yeah, that's the only one that I could kind of see it happening with. And then you also have the connection of, you know, Batman and the Outsiders, with where Black Lightning and Batman have teamed up. And since Arrow is a stand-up for Batman, you know, that could be another kind of, you know, thing to kind of mix and match. So we'll, you know, I don't know if it'll happen this season, because it seems like they're pretty kind of focused on the Elseworlds crossover as far as their big event. So, you know, we'll see.
I would actually pay money for somebody to do a behind the scenes where Thunder and Green Arrow have a hand to hand throwdown.
Man. You know, considering the fact that, you know, Arrow has taken on the Flash, like, he doesn't have a problem with, you know, fighting the superpowered folks. So it would be an interesting fight. I mean, I'd actually pay money.
I would. You know, I was like, make it a DVD extra, put it online, something. Yeah. I would cheer for that to happen. I mean, he's strong enough, he's agile enough, he's smart enough. I'm surprised they haven't shown him doing like one-handed salmon ladders by now. But oh my goodness! But I don't know. I think we've dug into all this as far as we can with the little knowledge that we have so far.
Can I give a couple of suggestions for people to like read if they want to kind of
absolutely
dig? Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I always tell people that these shows are based on comic books, so it'd be nice to go out and buy them. But the first one was a series, like, and I think they're going to DC is going to release the trade next month. But it was a series called Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands. And it was written by actually Black Lightning's creator, Tony Isabella.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it was a really good series from what I was able to check out. But it also has a bit of social commentary mixed into it, more than I'd expected. But that was more of a recent one. And one from a few years ago was Black Lightning Year One, which is just basically focusing on more of an updated origin for the character. But and Tobias Well plays a really big part in both stories. So yeah, so Cold Dead Hands and Black Lightning Year One.
Cool. I'm glad to hear that Cold Dead Hands is coming out as a trade, because that one, mm-hmm. I think Tony was still writing that when I interviewed him last year.
Okay, cool.
Because, yeah, I talked to him last year for when Black Lightning was starting out, and he was talking about Cold Dead Hands, and I think issue one had just come out, I believe. But now that it's coming mm-hmm. out in the trade, I will have to jump on that.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it. It was really good. It was really good.
Cool. Ture?
Yeah, no, me, no. I'm in hiding. I'm in hiding because Tobias likes my tweets on Twitter, and since he's telling people that he likes, I'm like afraid now. So, yeah, don't tell him where I am. I think I gave out too much information already. Damn.
Well, yes, he retweeted one of my tweets, and I think somebody from the writer's room tweeted something else, I admit. So I'm like, you guys are going to mess with my feels. I'm going to have to go stock up on comfort food snacks tonight. But yes, I'm definitely looking forward to more Black Lightning and hopefully some interviews with cast and crew again this year. That's what I'm looking forward to. So Where can people find you online to follow more of your commentary?
We can always be found at blacksci-fi.com. That's blacksci-fi.com. And we weekly we have reviews of Black Lightning done by Fabian Wood, one of our other contributing writers. He's our resident like Lightning reviewer and Cloak and Dagger and also. But you can check us out at blacksci-fi.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ture Robert. Enjoy Black Lightning and everything else that we're watching.
Oh yeah.
And we'll be back with And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Again, I want to thank Robert and Ture for joining me in that deep dive into Black Lightning, because that is probably one of the best superhero shows you're not watching. I love that show. I really do. The sass in that show brings a light of joy to my heart. So you should be checking it out. In other news, Marvel is breaking my heart. The past 2 weeks have seen two of our favorite Marvel shows. Well, maybe not everyone's. Iron Fist was canceled last week. Luke Cage was canceled this week. And no word yet on whether or not either of those shows will be picked up by Disney's new streaming service, or if they will both just fade away, and maybe the new show that shows up on Disney's new streaming service will be Heroes for Hire or Daughters of the Dragon, in which case I will be upset because I have absolutely no intention of signing up for Disney's service right when it comes out, no matter what's on there. Because knowing Disney, they'll probably overcharge for it. I mean, these are the people who have been overcharging for ESPN for 20 years. So yeah, my expectation is that Disney's new streaming service will be like double what Hulu is or Netflix is. And I will just say, you know what? You guys are going to make me go buy the Blu-rays instead. I'll wait. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. So yeah, my hope is that we will get to see more of Marvel's television shows on Netflix, but I don't know. The only thing that is for certain is that Jessica Jones Season 3 wrapped filming earlier this year and is set to debut in 2019 sometime. And the same goes for Punisher Season 2. I think that is still filming or still in post-production, but that will also appear on Netflix in 2019. Beyond that, whether or not we get more Daredevil, whether or not we get more Jessica Jones or Punisher after 2019, all remains to be seen. If they do give us more Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Punisher, I'm fairly confident those will be on Netflix because those are darker shows. And we've seen Disney doesn't like to mix their children's programming with their mainstream or more, I guess, you can't really call it adult, but with all the violence, I'm thinking Punisher and Daredevil lean towards R. And we know Disney doesn't do R-rated stuff. They don't. They just don't. The fate of those shows, to me, is undecided. And that is so darn sad because so far, Daredevil Season 3 is delightful. I haven't gotten through it all yet. We're still working through that. But I enjoy Daredevil. I love, out of all the Netflix shows, Daredevil has always been my top show. Because I was a diehard reader of the Daredevil comics back in the 80s and early 90s. So, yeah. I don't know what to think. I will stay optimistic and we shall move on. But if you have any questions about Black Lightning, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Punisher, Luke Cage, or Iron Fist, call in. The number is 602-635-6976. You can leave a message or send an email with your question to summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also go to the website, leave a comment on the show notes. I believe Robert and Ture will be checking in on that every now and then, or follow up on Twitter. You can listen to this show in a various number of places. We have iTunes, we have Stitcher, we have Google Play, we have TuneIn. And if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Twitter for all sorts of interesting conversations. It's the place to check out is at Slice of Sci-Fi over there. We do live tweets of Manifest on Monday nights, Black Lightning on Tuesday nights, and the occasional mention of Babylon 5, which is in, oh my God, it's on in reruns on Comet TV. The 12 noon Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern. And yeah, that's 7 days a week, people. I'm loving this. I'm loving seeing Babylon 5 on TV again. Just hearing the soundtrack, hearing the opening theme brings peace and joy to my heart. It's something I'm desperately in need of. So yeah, follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. We're also on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And as I mentioned earlier, there's also the website, sliceofsci-fi.com, where you can leave your comments on the shows that we've recorded. You can leave your opinion on the reviews that we've done. And you can also search for older shows that we've done with various directors, cast members of various shows, and just enjoy the work, the effort to bring more sci-fi and horror entertainment to you that we have done for you. I want to thank everybody for your support of Slice of Sci-Fi. Your donations through Patreon really do help keep the lights on around here. You can add your support by going to patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. And yes, very soon I will be getting out the new tiers for the freebies that people will be eligible for based on which level, donation level, they are appearing at. Right now we have advanced reader copies of books, finished copies of books, and DVDs. Definitely DVDs and Blu-rays. So check those out sometime in the next week or so, and we will press on from there. Again, if you want to help support the shows here, which includes Writers After Dark and the Archives for Babylon podcast, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. I also want to throw a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for the theme music they have provided for this show. If you want to check out more music by them, go to their website, sci-fried.com. I highly recommend going to YouTube, checking out their channel for their music videos. You will be entertained. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.